Hey guys, I'm Jordan Frommer. I believe in hunting hard, hunting smart, and having a fun time while doing it. And shooting limits? Well, that's just the icing on the cake. I revel in the journey just as much as the successes it brings. From ducks to dogs to decoys and guns, we'll be talking tactics, strategies, and what it takes to get the job done. Load up and take aim. This is the Duck Gun Podcast.
What's going on, folks? Thanks for joining me on another episode of the Duck Gun Podcast, the podcast that helps you become a better waterfowl hunter. I'm joined tonight by none other than the King of the Cans, Hunter D. Roosevelt, or should we call him the Godfather of canvas back hunting? How are you doing tonight, Hunter?
Oh, man, I'm doing all right. I guess this episode is going to release current, but the weather is just weird. Just way weird here. We've had, like, I don't know if it all stuck, probably like 6 inches of snow and 2 inches of rain in the last 2 days.
Yeah, we've been having a super wet spring too. We had flurries today, but they didn't stick here. I wish these rains were falling in the Prairie Pothole region, the Duck Factory, but it does look like we're going to have, looking at drought maps, does look like the breeding habitat is not going to be in our favor as duck hunters this year.
Yeah, I know that I saw some stuff too. It looked like north of me, like Minnesota and stuff, still was getting quite a bit of this rain, and they got quite a bit of water over the last couple weeks. But yeah, it seems like everything is just like going around North Dakota, which just sucks.
Right. Unfortunately.
Like, heck, one of these 2-inch rains up there, that's a couple million birds.
Right. Right. But nothing we can do about that. Just pray for it the next year, and everything goes in ebbs and flows. And unfortunately, that's one of those things as well that we can't control. So, but you know, we do, kind of changing subjects a little bit here. I don't know if you're anything like me, Hunter. All I can do right now, is think about the darn 43-foot duck hunting river houseboat that we've been working on. And yeah, I'm so ready to go back.
Yeah, so am I, man. I'm counting down the days. Honestly, I thought it was 2 weeks ago we were supposed to be back up there, but we'll be back up shortly. And then, you know, more projects to ensue, and I'm sure we'll uncover more stuff we'll have to fix that we didn't plan on it and everything else. But yeah, I'm very excited to go back up. We were just talking about like whether or not it's just a figment of both of our imaginations.
It just seemed like when we're so far away from it, and not, you know, not there, it just seems almost like, what's the right word? Unreal. It really does. I was trying to think of a different word, but that's the best word to describe it, I think. It just doesn't feel like it's a real thing. If you guys have missed it, I've released 3 parts to the cleanup process of the boat, the original like walkthrough, and you guys heard the podcast from when we were there, but the walkthrough podcast kind of showing like what we have to work with, explaining how this all came to be and like our plans for the season. And it's been really cool to see like the reception you guys have had. You know, so many people that are so excited, like, man, I can't believe you guys are doing it. This is such a cool idea. This is going to be, when I hear this one, I've heard it like a handful of times, which is, makes me feel pretty good about the project and the prospect of it. But they're like, if you pull this off, this will be the coolest duck hunting series ever on YouTube. And I was like, that's a bold statement. You know what I mean? So there's some people that just, you know, are as diehard or as crazy as us to like really enjoy this type of project.
Oh yeah. And there's also the detractors, you know, the ones, the typical ones are what, like a cheap boat costs the most, wood boats, you know, everybody knows a boat stands for bust out another 1,000 and a right. Hole in the water in which you dump money, and the detractors of how much time it'll take.
The
you're
pessimist.
All right. Yeah.
It's like, I'm like a hyper optimist. I think I've told you before, like I was like, I'm aggressively optimistic or something like that. When I see an idea, all I can do is like fill the holes with like far-fetched solutions that I just get wholeheartedly behind, especially when it's like something I really want to do. Like, I want to convince myself that I can do this. And so you're like, or these comments are like this, you know, these comments are, hey, you know, all the negative, like, you guys have signed up for like unbelievable amounts of work. We're like, we know, and we're so excited about it, which just makes us crazy. So it is funny to see kind of both sides of it, where there's some people who are like, man, this is awesome. And I mean, I think it's just because it's such a big and crazy project that it is going to skew from one side where people are like, this is the coolest thing ever, to this is the dumbest thing ever.
Oh, totally.
Not agree. A lot of middle ground.
Yeah. And I mean, are you really doing something right if you don't have anybody like hating on what you're doing? Like, are you really doing the right thing? And especially like right. content generation, if you're not having at least a couple people doubting what you have going on. And I mean, to be fair, I am not totally convinced that it'll happen. So, and I'm a part of it. So
I think you've come around the more we've talked and planned, and you've come around a little bit. But you know, there is a lot to overcome. But you know, I think with all of our hard work and determination, here I am again, you know, the aggressive optimist.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, boats don't float on hope and don't run on faith. So, you know, we'll need a little bit more than that. Yeah. But it is cool. It's going to be awesome. I mean, and regardless, we talked about this off air, and also I think we've talked about it on air too. Regardless of what happens with it, it's still going to be a huge adventure, and it's still going to be right. just an awesome, exciting thing to like be a part of and right. have fun with, and an experience, really.
Yeah, if we get to have one season on this boat, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
In our lifetime, you know, this season, and we get one season on the boat, I think all the work and everything going into it will be something we remember for the rest of our life. So it's hard to put a value, like a quantifiable value on something like that, you know? Obviously you have to, because that's just how life works. But yeah, either way, I'll be super disappointed if we go put all this work in and it doesn't flow, or like we can't get the motor to run, or we run into some impassable obstacle. Like I said, right now, aggressive optimist. I think we'll be able to surpass every obstacle, but we don't know until we get there.
Yeah. And see, I'm on the opposite side, generally speaking. I'm more of a pessimist when it comes to things. So
you're like a roller coaster, man, talking to you. Cause like one day you'll be like, oh yeah, this, then the next day you're like, I don't know. Those gaps were pretty big.
Well, like, obviously that has to come with emotions. Like, I'm excited about it and everything. And I am excited about it. I just like, I'm a pessimist and about things generally speaking. So I'm more level-headed, or I shouldn't say level-headed, because that's definitely not the word. I'm definitely strained more towards the pessimistic side than you do. Especially like, I remember sure. When I was looking at the boat, I was sending you Marcos and I'm like, hey man, this thing's cool. And I really like it, but it's probably not the play. And you're like we're getting it anyways.
You're like, but this. I'm like, sounds like a fun project. You're like, but this. And I'm like, sounds like something we can fix. You're like, yeah. But also I noticed. And I'm like, doesn't seem like a problem to me.
Here's the spot.
And here we are.
Foot goes through the hole, through the
right. Yeah, that's always a problem if you're standing on the deck and your foot goes through. You're like, oh, I'm like, yeah, nothing, a little 2x4 and some wood screws and slap on some bubble gum and we'll MacGyver this boat all the way through the Mississippi,
I guess.
All right. Anything else you've been up to? I guess the only thing I've been up to beyond this, as far as like duck hunting related stuff, is I am still working with Chief and doing the training there. Man, he's such an excited retriever. He loves the bumper, which is making training awesome. Got him from Southern Oak Kennels, Great Lakes, just north of me in Michigan. People ask that all the time when they're asking about him, but, I've just started collar conditioning. And had to like step back a little bit. I think I jumped into it a little bit before he was ready. And then kind of refreshed him on some of the stuff going into it, got him more, what's the right word? Schooled. I don't know what the right word is for, more consistent and accurate and everything that I'm asking him for before I'm nicking him with the collar. So now we're back to that. And, I think things are headed in the right direction as much as they can be with, I really didn't do very much training with Chief, the first Chief. Now, Chief Junior, I'm trying to follow the book, follow the path a little bit more, rigidly. So, but I think things are going good. I mean, today, if I took him hunting today, I think that he would retrieve ducks for me, you know, shoot them. I know he's not gun shy. He is relatively steady. And when he's not, I don't let him retrieve. So all that kind of stuff that goes into retriever training. So we're going to keep at that all year long. And the goal is to have him ready, in September.
Yeah. I actually have been kind of lacking on the dog training stuff. It's just been so wet here over the last couple of weeks that I have to drive to go to a dog training area, and it's unconducive when it's just this wet. And I was extremely sick over the last couple of weeks. So recovering off of that. So I haven't been doing a lot of dog training. I've been starting to get some other off-season projects going, you know, getting decoys back out and cleaned and all that kind of fun stuff, but nothing right. Super exciting.
Yeah. I actually did my garage too. I'll send you some Marcos of that, but that was an undertaking. So I'm glad I got that all ready to go for season as well. So let's get a quick word from our partners. Today's episode, we got Titus from Mid Valley Mercenary or the MVM show, depending on where you're listening to him from. Great guest, longtime buddy, awesome waterfowl hunter. So stay tuned for all that. You don't want to miss it. Get to catch up with him and see everything that he's been up to as well. So let's get a quick word from the partners and we'll jump right into the main meat of the podcast. So first off, I'd like to give a big thanks to Weatherby. Guess Weatherby is got some great options for the waterfowl hunter when it comes to shotguns. They've been long since known for their excellence in rifles. And now they're known for their excellence in shotguns as well. They keep coming out with some cool and improved and awesome shotguns. They just came out with the Sorex not too long ago. And it's just a great gun. So, they also have the Orion side-by-side that came out with in the last year. They have, the 18i. They just have a great selection. If you're in the market for a shotgun as a waterfowl hunter, consider Weatherby when you're considering your next shotgun. Also like to give a big thanks to Final Approach. You guys, Final Approach, the one-stop shop for the duck hunters. They got blinds. They got decoys. They got waders. They got a lot of good stuff. Hunter, you just got a pair of waders from FA. How are you liking those?
Yeah, I got them actually sitting right here. But yeah, I love them so far. I mean, obviously, I just wore them around the house and did cool guy stuff in my waders, made sure I could squat down and sit and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, they're really comfortable. It's the first time I've ever had the front zip waders. So I was kind of getting game used changer. To getting in and out of those. They're way easier. The thing I really like that the front zip gives, because I never really had a problem getting into waders being, you know, kind of a skinnier guy. But the front zip makes it to where the straps aren't like, don't have a buckle where you like put your arm through the strap like a sleeve.
It's true, yeah.
And it's so much better than the buckles. I always have a problem with like the buckles being right where my gun wants to mount. And so I tend to undo buckles when I was using waders. But yeah, being able just to slide your hands inside of the like underneath the arms, underneath the shoulder straps is a better option than I thought it was going to be. Like it's not, it feels better than higher priority, I guess, than I thought it would be. But overall,
right.
I mean, so far, so good.
Definitely. Yeah. So when you're in the market for waterfowl products, guys, FA is always improving, innovating new stuff. I mean, that wader that they just came out with in the last year. So definitely check them out over there. Go to fabrand.com and use code DUCKGUN over there to get 10% off. It also applies to other sales too. So get that discount added on and you'll be glad you did. Also like to give a big thanks to Onyx. Guys, Onyx has a great app for the waterfowl hunters out there. If you're looking for permission, it's great for turkey hunting too. You know, I use that in turkey time. But if you're out there looking for permission. You can click right on it. It gives you the landowner's tax information. You can go there, knock on the door, get your yes or your no, but it just makes that whole process a lot quicker. You know their name right when you walk up. You can ask for that person specifically. Gives you a little bit more rapport with the landowner coming into it, not just completely blind to the situation. So check them out, guys. Onyx is great for the duck hunter, and they have, you know, a lot of other tools that I didn't mention here as well, that can be implemented into all your hunting and your success there. Also like to give big thanks to Motion Ducks, guys. Motion Ducks has the jerk rig on steroids. It's, you know, it's the setup that gives lifelike motion to your set, puts ripples through the water, sets up in minutes, tears down just the same. And if you, I mean, a lot of people don't use a jerk rig, and you probably should. And then one step beyond that is using a Motion Ducks. It just gives that much better motion. It's just a better way of storing the whole setup. It's a great product. So, if you haven't tried them out, you should look them up. It doesn't do it justice just to say the words. You need to look at a video. I got it on my YouTube channel. There's other places you can find it. You can go to their website, watch some videos. Once you see it, I know you'll be sold. And when you are, go to their website and go to motionducks.com/duckgunchronicles and use code DuckGun10, and that'll get you your best discount over there. All righty, let's go ahead and get Titus on the podcast. All righty, folks, I am back, and I got Titus joining me. Titus from Mid Valley Mercenary, or the MVM show. He is a longtime buddy and friend, and so excited to have you on. He is a duck hunter. He's a podcaster. He's a social media influencer. He is a videographer and photographer. Your skills and skill set are growing by the day, Titus. So I'm super excited to have you on. It's been a few years, I think, probably two or three. I'd have to go back and look, but it's always been a joy to be around you. Outstanding guy, and outstanding duck hunter as well. So how you doing tonight, Titus?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you for the compliments. I'm doing great.
Definitely, man. I met every word of it. So excited to have you on. And like I said, it's been a couple years, so I think we really need to start from kind of the beginning and really give people the 10,000 foot view of, you know, everything you do, because not only are you steeped into the waterfowl hunting, but you even kind of pushed out the boundaries and expanded the envelope for yourself on that, with the content creation, with the podcast stuff, with the YouTube stuff. And now, man, you're just taking like fantastic pictures and videos. And that's, I think that's a really cool thing that you've kind of added to your repertoire as well. So, definitely a lot to get into that. But guys, if you don't follow Titus, you can follow him, over on his YouTube channel. It's Mid Valley Mercenary. He's anywhere where podcasts can be found, as well, at the MVM show. You do a great job with your, video version as well on your YouTube channel for that as well. And then all your photography stuff, and your hunting stuff as well, over there on, Instagram on Mid Valley Mercenary as well.
Thank you.
Did I leave anything out?
I don't think so.
Okay. Good deal. So, yeah, let's just jump into it, man. Let's start all the way back at the beginning. And how did you get into waterfowl hunting, and why, and what has made it like such a passion driven, experience for you?
Yeah. I went on my first duck hunt when I was 9 with my dad, and I was looking at that picture the other day. Gear's a lot different than it is now. I will tell you that. And what's pretty cool about this picture is I'm holding a strap, and you'll never guess what duck is hanging off that strap. Big old shovela.
Shovela. I was going to guess hooded merganser, but that's a
Yeah. So I was 9, and what's funny about that picture is actually I'm wearing a purple and black puffy jacket. Don't ask me why my dad let me wear that in the marsh, but it's a pretty cool photo. So that was my first official duck hunt. I was not shooting at the time. I just went with my dad and his friend from work. And then the next time I went was I was 16, and one of my best friends, Travis McDonald, he invited me out. And the first thing, I opened his truck door and I stepped inside, and he had a bag full of Jack in the Box greasy tacos, and it was like 3 a.m. He said, "Are you hungry?" I'm thinking, I just got out of bed. It's 3 a.m. Why would I be hungry? But sure, I ate a couple of those. So that was a great memory. To be honest with you, I don't even remember how that hunt went. You know, I did have a gun and I was hunting, but I remember those tacos. <That's> so hilarious. I don't know if they messed me up or what, but yeah, that was when it really all started. And to be honest with you, from there on out, I've just got more passionate about it than I did the first time I went. Like, I love it so much more than I did then. I think that's been 24 years now. So there's been some years where I didn't hunt as much as others just because of life and school and kids and work and whatever. But I will say, and I've told this to my wife, I said, I love it more than I did last year. You know, so I grew up big game hunting with my dad, deer and elk. My dad loves archery elk hunting in the rut. But and that's fun too. But what I really, really love to do when I think about year round is duck hunting for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, that's super cool to hear. Were you you said you're 9 when your dad took you. Do you remember about what age you were you know, going into the next your first hunt?
16, yeah.
You're 16. Okay, did you say that? Okay. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, that's super cool. I'm definitely envious of you getting that early start. I didn't start near as early, so that's super cool. And then you got, you know, 20 plus years of duck hunting experience and a lifetime of memories. Mm-hmm. You kind of already did this, but I was going to ask you to share a memory or a story from one of your earliest duck hunting experiences. So I don't know if you want to if you got anything else to kind of add to that, or if that's kind of your best taco story.
I feel like that's the one that always sticks out to me. It's just funny because I won't even touch those things now, and I don't know if there's anybody listening that actually love those. My wife still likes those, my girls like them, but like I don't know if something happened to me when I ate those tacos.
You grew up.
Yeah, something happened. But no, I mean, there's so many memories. Like, I can just, there's actually people that I grew up duck hunting with in that group, because we used to go with a lot bigger group back then. And he was quite a bit older than me, and he actually passed away a couple years ago. And so, you know, someone that we used to harass and tease each other, and he was a lot older than us, and we made fun of him and calling and this and that. Now he's no longer with us, and just miss him, you know, because we all go through life and people pass and time goes by, and you're thankful for the memories that you had, you know.
Definitely agree with you on that. And that's one thing I've always seen with your videos, and that really comes through great. I mean, you have a great duck hunting community around you. You have a great community of guys. And I really think that, you know, having guys like you that foster that and have that is like a big part of duck hunting and a big reason for like why we enjoy it and getting to get out. So that's, you know, kudos to you and your group there. You guys have, it's definitely something admirable.
I'm blessed for sure. I'm very thankful for that.
Awesome. So you know, you went straight from that to, like, I shouldn't say straight from that because it was years later, but to continue on with your duck hunting, at one point you decided that you were going to start up a YouTube channel and a podcast, and you're going to share your duck hunting experiences, you know, and preserve them for yourself. I don't know exactly what your thought process was. But what inspired you to do that and kind of share that content with, you know, everybody else?
And I don't know, like the farther away I get from when it started, the more I think I forget about why it did. I will be honest with you, Jordan. I didn't even know about subscribing. I didn't even know what that meant when I first started. Like, I did use YouTube, but I more used it for, because you know, as good as I do, that YouTube has just changed compared to what it was when me and you started.
Right.
It was more like how to's and changing, you know, your dishwasher out. It was a lot of that stuff, you know. It was, and there wasn't nowhere near the content that it's on there now. I mean,
it was like heavy metal kill montages, right? It was like what duck hunting was when we first started. From like a few select few, you know, that we're buddies with now, but
exactly. And so I don't think when I did this, I had a couple of videos on there that are way older than my channel actually is, where I would actually start uploading duck hunts. I put a couple of things of a helicopter, and I put it on there like to keep it, to preserve it, right? Like it just stuck it on there. Like to me, in my head, it was just an uploading place to hold it if someone wanted to watch something I had, not people I didn't know, people I did know, right? Well, I think I'd seen a couple, I don't know if it was a grind or like who it was. I don't feel like it was a grind. It was someone else that had a couple videos on there. I know it was Alex Langbell. I think it was something he had on there that was pretty old. And I would go on there and watch it. I was like, man, that's cool. I hadn't even found out about, like you said, some of our other buddies at the time. And I was like, man, I should do that. I should record our hunts, just put a GoPro on my head and just keep it, put it on a place where I could go back and watch it later. Again, I didn't know about subscribing. I didn't think about that. I didn't know you could make money. I knew nothing. And I always like saying that, not that it matters if you do know you can make money, but anyways, I maybe put one or two goofy ones on there. I was still learning how to edit, whatever. People don't even see those hardly. I never hear nothing from those, but the one official one I did from the beginning to the end of the hunt and kind of like, documented it, I guess, so to speak. It was when me and Thomas double tapped that Pentel, that had a band on it. And of course, me and him were a lot more, hooping and hollering back then, but we were freaking out and, had the rock music in the background. And it's like, we were pumped and just a super hype video, I guess, so to speak. And it was a great hunt too. I'll never forget that hunt actually. But I uploaded that, had no subscribers, like 80, 70. Like I wasn't even trying to get subscribers and I wasn't thinking nothing about it. And in a week, I had 1,000 subscribers and like 15 or 20,000 views on that video. And
oh,
I was,
man,
like, what is going on? And like, that's when it kicked off in my head. I'm like, me being a numbers guy, I was like, okay, let's see what we can do with this. And then I started seeing you, and I started seeing Elliot and Josh, and like, you know, started seeing you guys. Didn't know you guys then, but it wasn't, a competition thing. It was just like, oh, cool, there's other guys that put stuff out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think we started pretty close at the same time.
You were doing stuff before
me. I couldn't remember who started.
I'm like 99% sure you were.
I might have. But my first season was also my first season hunting. So it was pretty, not only was it pretty poor content, but it was pretty poor hunting. So I do remember watching you and in the attempt to actually learn waterfowl hunting. So because that's how new I was and how green I was, you know, I was watching, you know, I think Elliot's was the first channel I started watching. And Elliot and Josh were putting out content that first year. Mm-hmm. And I was like putting the worst videos you'd ever seen. Worst hunts. Oh,
join the club, Jordan. I was just going to say, like, you must have been really gearing to watch mine. You know, it's like, yeah, I didn't know how to duck hunt, but there was a lot of things I didn't know. But I think that's good in a way. Like I've kind of downed myself in the past about that. And like, those were cringy and those were this and that.
Oh no, they're awesome.
But it's like,
I remember the exact, like, how you're telling, they're a little goofy and you guys are like yelling and screaming. I mean, there's a reason that they popped off and got like 20,000 views, and it was very personable. I mean, and the subscribers just started pouring in. So
you know how it is though. I think you're always going to look back and judge yourself and like,
right.
This, you shouldn't have did that or this, but you know what? Now I'm not even hard on myself like that anymore. It's like, you know what? I still had a lot to learn then, even though back then I was only 10 years into duck hunting. I feel like the last 4 years I have like quadrupled, and not saying I'm some amazing duck hunter, by the way, but I have quadrupled in my knowledge and my skill set in like calling and shooting, just because I think putting stuff online and being able to be accountable for it, I think it does challenge you to be better. So I do give some props to being open to everybody and taking ridicule. Actually makes you better if you're a person that can do that, you know? So,
right.
And meeting people and learning from people. And another big thing was traveling and getting out there and putting yourself
definitely
in uncomfortable situations, that you've never been in before, not unsafe. I just mean like uncomfortable as in I've never been this place before. I'm not familiar with it. And that's where you learn the most, you know?
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I definitely can agree with you on that. So, going from hunting just, you know, just to hunt, and more like, I mean, that's duck hunting in the traditional aspect. But now, you know, with modern changes and technology and all that, and also, you know, creating the content, you know, what's your strategy for kind of balancing that? Because it is really a balancing act, you know, between hunting and creating the content, and it's something that to do a good job at both, you do have to balance it.
Man, that's a good question, because I've really just backed off on a lot. I only ended up getting 6 videos out last year. I definitely put the podcast on more of a priority basis. And I think I burned myself out too. I think we've all maybe faced that. I don't think I'm the only one, but it's like, man, I'm just ready to enjoy the hunt. And last year was the least amount of duck hunting videos I put out. And I'm curious. I actually had a goal. Jordan, I didn't even tell you guys this, but my goal was to put 20 videos out last year, which I haven't done that in a couple years. But I'm just going to tell you right now, a lot of people in California will say, oh, the duck hunt was so bad this year. It was terrible. I'm not going to join that group. It was different. It was weird and it was odd. This season was different. But honestly, for me, the reason I didn't put more hunts out is because it seemed like, I don't know, I don't want to say bad luck, but like every time I had my stuff with me and was ready to do it, we had to move or do something, because to me, the priority is getting the birds, not just filming, right? Like I do want to film, but like when it becomes an inconvenience and messes my hunt up, I've learned now just put it down. Whereas I used to fight through it before, and that's what caused me to get so frustrated, I think, is sacrificing my hunt just for the video. And it's like, nah, I'm not going to do that no more. So, And the season was slower than normal, so which is totally fine. I still had a good season, but yeah, I didn't put much out. But balancing it, man, it's tough. You just gotta learn when to say no, and that's always been hard for me. I feel like I can do 20 things at once, and it's just like it just doesn't work, you know. You just gotta kind of, because your family too, you got that, like you said, your family, you got the podcast, you got the hunt videos, you got partnerships and friendships, and me, I have church, and it's a lot. It is a lot.
Yep. Definitely fun on both aspects, but definitely a lot as well. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah.
So kind of changing gears here a little bit. You know, I think we're both like this. We're both gearheads. And we can really love the duck hunting gear, and it's come a long way, yeah. and there's a lot of useful things, but what is a essential piece of gear that you'd recommend that every duck hunter should have, regardless of their experience level?
I wish you would have pre-prepped me for that one, because I feel like no matter what I say,
you on the spot. These are
no matter
there's no
what,
wrong answers here. There's no
there's
wrong
not.
Answers.
But I'm the kind of guy. 10 minutes later, I'm gonna think this was a better one than this one.
Right. No, these are
Yeah, so yeah, because we're not, I wouldn't want to go too extravagant, because we want to make that something that everybody.
You're like a duck boat with a surface drive.
Yeah, I know. You know what? To be honest, Jordan, I'll tell you right off the gate. And again, I'll probably think of something better or different next time. But what every duck hunter could benefit from most as far as a tool to hunt, I mean, obviously, shells and guns, the obvious thing, right? We don't need to worry about that. But if you want to go on a budget and you want to have the most powerful tool in the shed for a duck hunt, I really think, and this is, it's, you can take it as a plug or what, and I'm not, it's not why I'm doing it, but it is motion ducks, 4 decoys and a motion ducks for movement. Literally, I know I could go anywhere. I feel like I could do it with 1 decoy too, but if I could go take 4 decoys and motion ducks, jerk string, pull string, like you always say, on steroids. And that's what I have. And no matter what state I am, I will kill ducks. And I will have them finishing. I do believe that.
I think it's really kind of like an overlooked piece that where people, when I first got in, it wasn't something I thought about for years, that like you have to have the motion on the water. you know? And a lot of people, I don't know what it is, but like the spinning wing, you know, a lot of people kind of feel, I used to say when I first started hunting, I feel naked without it. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't have a spinning wing. But more and more it's kind of grown towards, you gotta have that motion on the water, regardless of like, you know, what it is. And that the motion ducks is really, a great solution to that problem, but it's like, you gotta have motion on the water. And I think the duck hunting community is really kind of all coming together and realizing, hey, that's how you finish birds, because they're smart and they can pick out little things that just seem off,
right?
And they just won't get close enough.
Yeah.
And so I definitely agree with you that motion ducks is definitely a great piece, to an essential piece for any duck hunter.
Well, every state has different regulations too, right? So you could say, well, I can just buy three pulsators from Higdon or something and I'm going to have water. Well, yeah, some states you're not allowed to use that. You know what I mean? So
what can I take that
covers every single state and creates movement and as decoys, that's the tool, because I'd rather have that any day, and I've said this a lot on my podcast, but I'd rather have that any day of the week in every single scenario than I would have 5 dozen stagnant steel decoys with no wind and 6 mojos out in the water. It's just, that's what I'm going to pick all day long for sure.
Right. Yep. Definitely agree with you. So one thing you kind of added to your duck hunting as well is a variety of shotguns. And I think most people don't have a variety. You know, I think the standard, let's go back, you know, 10, 15 years, you had your one duck gun. And I guess it is a luxury to be able to have multiple duck guns. And then you go one step beyond it. I mean, you've hunted with 28 gauge this year. Am I wrong on that or am I right?
Yeah, I started last year with that, okay. Actually. Yeah.
All right, last year. I remember seeing it in the Marcos. You hunted with 28 gauge. I know that you also enjoy hunting with your 20 gauge and then your 12 as well. So I did call Matt the king of the 28 gauge last time he was on my podcast. So I don't know if there's a debate on that as far as between you and him.
No, you know what's funny about that? If Matt even listens to this, I'm going to give him, I think I've said this before, but it's funny because before Matt even got one, my friend Harrison he had bought a TriStar. And this is right before we went and hunted with Matt. Me and Harrison and Matt went with Matt to Nebraska. And Harrison had his before we went on that trip. And I think we were talking about it on that trip. And Matt got one the next year or that year. I can't remember. And I wanted one. Basically, all three of us were kind of at the same time. But Matt definitely got the head start on that one for sure. The money that I had to spend, I was putting into camera stuff and stuff like that. But
right,
man, I love that. I love that gun. And I don't care if people call me a bandwagon, whatever. I know I'm not, because I was wanting one before anybody was even shooting. I just didn't buy it till later. But, oh, man, right. I love that gun.
I do have a question kind of with all the you know, but I've kind of I don't want to necessarily step on your toes. Now, if Matt was here, I would 100%.
Oh, for sure.
But I don't want to step on your toes with this question, so I'm going to be careful how I word it. But like in private, when I talk about the 28 gauge, because I really don't understand the allure, so you're going to have to bring it to me here a little bit. The way I've described it to people in non-public arenas, is like, what's the point of using a 28 gauge? Like, is duck hunting that easy that you have to create like harder handicaps and mini games to like kill ducks, or like what? So, you know, like I said, there's my aggressive on it. I'll let you give your thoughts on it.
No, that's a legit question. It really is a legit question. I guess I don't know which direction to go with that, because it's not to make it harder. I promise you that. I don't know what Jordan, I don't really know what the allure was originally. I don't know. But in the using of it and why I've fallen in love with this gun, and now mind you, I am shooting a tungsten alloy. So, I mean, if anybody knows anything about ammo, that has a big factor. So people can say, well, you're using this gun, a lower gauge, but you're, or higher gauge, but you're using that kind of ammo, then, well, it's like, what's the point? And it's like, yeah, I mean, I guess you have some legitimacy to that response, but my, why I love it, there's a couple things. One is it's way quieter. It's a lot easier on the ears. It also doesn't bring a lot of attention if I'm hunting out in a marsh and maybe I'm spread out away from somebody else. They don't hear it as good, which that sounds kind of sneaky, I guess, but it's kind of a reality of it. You're not drawing a lot of attention. I also like it too. I don't know if it's because it's so light, because it almost feels like a toy gun in a way or what, but it just, I shoot better with it. Like my percentage of shooting and my accuracy is so much better with it. And I don't know if that's because of return to target, right? There's no kick. So you're not coming up and then trying to come back down and reacquire the bird, but it's just, I shoot so good with it. And, I'm so confident with it. Like I said, my numbers for accuracy are up. So maybe it's just all those combinations. And, I don't know. Like when you shoot 12 gauge, I don't ever think about it hurting my shoulder or kicking me. I mean, that's not what I'm trying to avoid. But when you do shoot the 28 a bunch and then you go back to the 12, you're like, my Lord, this thing's a cannon, you know? So, which, whatever. You just don't think about it when you're hunting. But
I know those. So, is the 20 gauge kind of the happy medium?
It is. Yeah. The 20 gauge is, and I love it. I would say I probably shot this season, I probably shot the 20 gauge, maybe, I'm going to say, 60 to 70%, and then my 28 the rest of the time. I only shot my 12 one time this year, one hunt. And that was on that hunt that my friends shot both, they both shot banded ducks, mallards, back to back.
So are you shooting tungsten only from the 28, or do you shoot it out of the other guns as well?
Yeah, and again, like I said, it is a tungsten alloy. I'm not shooting TSS. It's like,
okay, gotcha.
It's basically 12 grams per cubic centimeter is what heavy 12 is. On my 20, I shoot, and this is because the molar chokes, and Jimmy Moeller talked about whatever you pattern on, stick with that. Don't be bounce around. So I shoot heavy bismuth with my 20 strictly, and I shoot 3-inch six shot. And then with my 12, I just shoot a variety. I shoot steel, heavy metal extreme, heavy bismuth, whatever. Just no specific, you know, like I got to shoot this ammo with that gun.
So you kind of answered it, you know, and through my questioning. So your preference then is, I mean, I guess I'll let you answer it. What is your preference for your shotguns then?
Yeah, I said this last year at the end of season, I go, Thomas, honestly, I really don't care about shooting anything else besides this 28 gauge again. I just love it, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like it's, now that being said, You and I both have a very special tender spot in our hearts for the Browning A5s. I love the A5. Now, I'll tell you this. I will mark this down. My heart is still with the A5, and I wish they came out with the 20 gauge this year, but they did it in, you know, the walnut and the wood stock and all that stuff. But, man, the moment they come out with a 20 and even a 28, I am buying them absolutely 100% for sure.
Awesome. Definitely. So, yeah, we talked about ammunition as well. So is in terms of your, photography, you know, where was the thought as far as, adding that to like part of your duck hunting experience?
Man, when was that? Like 3 or 4 years ago? I've always been intrigued by photography, like professional, like really good quality. And a friend of mine, Caleb Marmolejo, he's got crazy experience, been all over the place, been all over the world, was big surfer, grew up with a lot of, I don't know if you know who, his name's Berknar. I think his last name is Berknar. He's huge, huge page on Instagram. Anyways, they all grew up together in like SoCal on the coast and was big surfers. Anyways, he reached out to me and I seen his page and man, just the looks and the color of his pictures. It wasn't in waterfowl, but he wanted to get into it. So he was like basically saying, hey, why don't we make a trade? You teach me how to duck hunt. And I was like, yeah, and I'll learn from you how to take photography because I was reaching out to people. And no one wanted to help me. They were wanting to charge me like crazy money to get the knowledge of how to use the aperture and the ISO and all these things combined. And I was going to pay it, but I was like, I can't believe one guy wouldn't even do it. He was like, oh, my rate's like $2,000 a day. And I'm like, oh, okay, get lost. I ain't paying that. Anyways, so I feel like it was kind of Lord put him in my life, you know, like mutually, because he had never duck hunted before. And I had never gotten to photography. And as we worked together and became closer and closer friends, he kind of gave me suggestions on what lenses to buy. And that poor guy, I probably bucked the dog out of him, asking him 100 questions and not using the right terminology, but he was super patient with me. And I tried to return the favor by teaching him all his questions, you know? And,
right.
I saved and saved and saved, invested all my YouTube money back into getting the camera that I have now. And I upgraded some more of those, and so it's expensive. But I honestly, I love it. Like, I literally love, like, in the marsh, taking those cool shots. I didn't get as many this year as I wanted to, but I got some pretty cool shots. And I even, Jordan, you asked that question. I actually, there was duck still working. It's only like 8 o'clock. Thomas was still actively shooting birds. I put my gun down, believe it or not, and I grabbed my camera and was taking shots in there. Actually, I had never done that until last year. I usually do it when the hunt's over, but I'm so glad I did, because I got the coolest shot. Thomas picking that mallard up out of the water and stuff. But
right.
I love it. And
great. You do some great work too. It's really impressive, you know, how far you've taken it. And then like here recently, man, I've just seen like you got some really cool shots of pintails and videos, man. And just, I mean, like the detail and man, it's like something out of Nat Geo or something. I don't know, man.
Well, I guess when you rent a $13,000 lens, you better have some good quality come out. So to rent it, you can rent that. I rented it for 3 days, and I want to say it cost $350. And I was just crossing my fingers. I don't know anybody, even my buddy, never has rented that lens. And it's what it is. It's a 600 millimeter. So that's super zoomed in at 4.0 aperture. And it's constant. So you can't go in or out. It's set there.
Oh, okay.
And it's 4.0 aperture, which you know about aperture. I mean, that's pretty low for that long range of a lens.
Right.
And I thought, I hope this is as good as I think it is. And I've heard it is. So it costs like $300 for 3 days or something like that. So I wanted to invest my money into it. So I did it. And oh my goodness, man. I mean, a lot of those pictures I've been posting for the last month has all been from that. A lot of them have been from that lens. And my goodness, like I said, if you wanted to buy that lens, it's $13,000. In fact, I think Bo Brooks, that's the lens he saved up for like, I don't know how many years to buy that. And
that's crazy.
He was the one that was telling me basically like, it's worth it, you know? So, I mean, you do got to edit and you do got to know how to use it, because you can't just get that lens. Not that I'm so skilled, but you really can't just get that lens and go out there and start snapping pictures if you don't have your settings right, because you need to do it manually, not automatic, to get those shots. Trust me, I have a lot of photos. I'm just like wanting to cry, because you think they're going to look so good and you get home and you're just like,
oh yeah, that's the worst feeling. And I don't do it at near the level you do it, but like even, you know, shooting video and things out of focus, you just like, you gotta be kidding me. Now I gotta, you lost
so
that.
So frustrating. Yeah, I lost it. Literally. Right.
It looks fine on the viewfinder, but you know, compared to when you get it on the photo or the photo on the computer or whatever. Man.
I think I've literally had tears well up in my eyes at some times. Yeah. So no, I love it. And it is starting to become more of a part of me, you know, because not only do I love capturing it, and I know when I look at my viewfinder, I'm like, oh man, this is awesome. But then getting home and editing is just fun. I mean, there's not much to edit, right? Just kind of sharpen things up and do it. But if you have your settings right, a lot of it's taken care of in the field, and I do love it. In fact, I'm going to go out this week and try to get a bunch more stuff.
Right.
And then, you know, Phil Conkey, he's supposed to come on the podcast soon. And he was like, yep, I'm going out all week long, every evening, all week. So I'm like, my goodness, I wonder how many pictures he takes a week, you know?
Right. Yeah. It probably takes quite a bit to get, you know, the high quality stuff. So yeah, for sure. So something else I kind of wanted to touch on, you know, we've been hearing lots of stories about, I mean, I feel like duck hunters maybe do this to themselves a little bit, but, a lot of duck hunters are kind of like doom and gloom and, you know, the sky's falling and the duck numbers and, But even more so, I've been hearing some stories coming out of like some Western states. And I'm not sure how much you pay attention to that all as well, but, and it just seems like some of the political landscape might be shifting away from like, and maybe it's always been this way, but like more towards like, not in favor of hunting. Am I kind of, you think I'm off on this, or
for California?
Is this, no, well, not necessarily California, but just in general, you know, I've been seeing that, seeing some stories, you know, we talk about like, the way the states are like managing, like putting out like wolves in states. And that doesn't necessarily, impact duck hunters the same way, but, it's the kind of whole phrase, you know, if they take things out kind of one by one, then there's nobody left to fight your battle when that day comes. Right. Mm-hmm. So as hunters, we really do have to stick together on all things, but, you know, not your state, but you know, a couple states over in Colorado, you know, they've started doing stuff like, letting the voters decide on, hey, are we going to have wolves released into the wildlife and stuff like that. So I feel like, you know, as duck hunters, we have to kind of keep a pulse on conservation. And kind of wanted to hear your take on that. You know, what do you think a duck hunter's responsibility? I know I've kind of laid this out in a broad sweeping kind of, way, but, it's something that myself that I've wanted to kind of be better at and keep a better pulse on these situations, and even then, like knowing what to do about them. But what do you believe that our responsibility is as duck hunters, when it comes to like conservation and kind of keeping a pulse on, and in politics when it comes around duck hunting as well?
Yeah, you know, I seen something the other day. That's a really good question, and that's funny you say that. You've been trying to get better at that, because I have too. It's like I would say I've been trying to do that for the last couple of years. And get more involved in things like that, because I'm the guy, right? Like I'm one of them. I'm here hunting. So, I mean, what can I do to help? Because I do want to carry on, and I don't just duck hunt so I can kill, right? Like I'm taking pictures of it, right? I'm out there after season's over 2 months later, still snapping photos. So one thing I've seen, though, that has been going around talking about politically, or a buzz that I've seen lately, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I think this has probably been 2 or 3 weeks ago, somebody posted something on their story that I seen, and I went and watched it. It was a podcast where these guys were saying, and I don't remember whose podcast it was, but they were talking about basically, let's take California, for instance, a lot of things ammo-wise, gun-wise, things have been going on for a while now, and crazy stuff. That's really pushing hard to take hunting away, to take rights away and stuff like that. And what they were saying is, look, stuff like you just said, Colorado, there's stuff going on in Montana, Wyoming now, and they're wanting all hunters to help with it, right? They want everybody to be involved. It don't matter what state you're from. We need everybody's help. But what someone had a good point of is, and I'm not saying we should do this and just say, well, too bad, too sad, you didn't help us when we need you. I don't agree with that at all. But those same people were the ones saying, well, you just need to move out of California. You just need to get out of California. When we were facing things and nobody would help us, and more of the liberal states, right? Like California is not the only one. Oregon's kind of that way. Washington, even this West Coast side. But people were like, their answer to it was, you need to get out of there, right? You need to get out of that state. And the whole point of what I'm saying is it doesn't matter what state you're from. We as hunters are one group, and we should all be helping each other when it comes to things of voting, or it comes things to signing petitions or whatever it is. I feel like to conserve things, that's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to put that aside. Doesn't matter if you're from Idaho, you're from California, you're from Indiana, you're from Pennsylvania. We need to bind together and group together as outdoorsmen, as hunters, to help each other no matter what state the issue is in. And so like some of that stuff that was going on, they were wanting petitions, people signed. I went on, there wasn't my state. But in the end, it's the the hunters that are being attacked. And it's not like, oh, it's the Californians. It's the Montanans. It's not that, you know? So I think that's a part of it too, you know, and then just the next generation, getting the younger hunters out there and taking them and my kids and other kids that they're going on their own now, because they don't need me anymore. They're doing their own thing, which is cool. And then now they're taking young guys, you know? So I mean, there's so many different ways. I mean, if you want to say you can donate to the Waterfowl Association of your state, Ducks Unlimited, Delta Waterfowl. I mean, all of us only have so much money, but there's just so many things we can do. And I think the heartbeat right now is we have to all help each other, and don't worry about where we're from. If there's an issue there, we need to group up and we need to attack it together.
Definitely. Definitely. Hunting is conservation, you know, and every dollar that's spent in hunting is dollar that is partially going towards conservation. Mm-hmm. So, and that's great. And like you said, like you do stuff in your Delta group, and that's something that I've put my mind to as well, by helping out in one of my local Ducks Unlimited organizations as well now. And not only that, but it's like you said, now there's these political issues that are coming up, where it feels like to some degree there is a push against hunting. And I don't know if it's just I haven't been aware of it, and maybe it's been happening through all of time. Not all of time, obviously, but in recent history. But it either it's been happening or now I'm more aware of it. Mm-hmm. And there does seem to be some people that are anti-hunting. And like you said, we want this tradition to carry on. Yeah. And you know, it's not good enough to be like, well, I don't live there, because it is a true statement. If they take things out, if they take states out, if they take groups out one by one, when that battle comes to your state or your front door, there'll be nobody left to stand with you and have a voice, against people who'd want to take, hunting away from us. You know, one good page to follow that I've been following for this is Sportsman Alliance. I don't know if there are other places besides Instagram, but that's where I follow them. And anytime any of these issues come up, they're pretty good about posting it, whether it's, you know, it doesn't matter what type of hunting or what issue. And again, even if it's like not a hunting type we do, the more hunters we can have, the more, voices we can have against whatever is going to come against us.
What is that, Jordan?
It's Sportsman Alliance. Alliance. So Sportsman's Alliance. M-E-N. Yep. And it's Sportsmen, yep, MENSALL, Sports or Sportsmen ALL, so Sportsmen Alliance.
Okay, yeah, I see. _ Alliance. Oh, that's not it. Yeah, I'm not finding it.
No, it's just straight Sportsmen.
All one word?
ALL, all one word on Instagram, yep.
ALIANC. Huh, I wonder why it's not pulling up. They're already hiding it.
We'll post it or share it or something as well. So, cool. But Titus, our time is running out. We said this on the last podcast. Me and Titus are doing multiple podcasts tonight to get that content out. And, you know, we didn't hit every question that I had planned, but we did get a good variety. So kind of to close it out, what are your kind of future plans you have in store? You can, you know, whether it be your podcast or channel or duck hunting or anything else that we kind of talked about, like what do you have going on in the future that you're excited for?
Yeah, I think I'm actually going to hit the East Coast. The plan is, as of right now, to hit the East Coast this year with a friend of mine and a new partner. So I would say I'm not so much worried about the partnership as I am the friendship, which is really cool. But Jimmy Moeller with Moeller Chokes has come on a lot on the podcast, but we're really trying to lock down a trip. He's invited us out there to the East Coast. He's from Connecticut. So I'm really stoked about that because they have some birds over there that I haven't hunted before. And he's got some great setups for that. And so I'm looking forward to that possibly this season. and then for the podcast and stuff, we're just rolling, keeping 2-3 episodes coming out a week. And videos coming up will be a lot of patterning videos. So different ammos and chokes and stuff like that. So yeah, we're staying busy. That's for sure.
Awesome. Well, it's been a pleasure as always, Titus. Thank you for jumping on. Thank you for your time and your knowledge. Definitely appreciate yeah, being here for this episode.
Thank you.
Guys, again, if you want to check him out, you can check him out on Mid Valley Mercenary on YouTube, MVM Show, Forced Podcast, and Mid Valley Mercenary on social medias as well. That's all we got for tonight, guys. I'm Jordan Duncan Chronicles, Titus, Mid Valley Mercenary, and we'll see you guys on the next one.